Hello, our Angry Robot podcast listeners, and welcome to an edition brought to you from lockdown in the UK. I'm actually not going to be recording this one myself. I'm handing it over to someone who is an expert in board games, because this month we're going to be talking about Time Stories, which is an incredible board game tie-in that Angry Robot are publishing this month. So I'm thrilled to throw the baton over to Eitan Ilfeld, who will be interviewing Françoise Dustet, who is a board game expert and worked on the creation of Time Stories. Eitan, take it away.
Could you share a little bit about Splendor?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's our first game. It was released in 2014, and it's a game about merchants of the Renaissance, and they're trying to become the most prestigious of them all by actually building an engine of cards. Cards representing guilds and boats and whatever, and you use them to build a better engine and become the most successful merchant.
Splendor's won a lot of awards and is a tremendous game. Today, I want to also talk about Time Stories. Tell us a little bit about Time Stories, which also was an extremely innovative game. From what I understand, the idea of having a role-playing game to make it more accessible so that nobody has to be the dungeon master?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, at the beginning, Time Stories was designed by Manuel Rozoy, who is the original designer of the game and the author, and who works with us now inside the studio. And originally, it started with a frustration because he's a role-playing gamer and he played D&D during his youth. But as time passes, you lose track of your friends and everything, and it becomes harder to set up big sessions of 4 or 5 hours. And role-playing games, well, you need that. So, and of course, you need a dungeon master, so a game master who is actually preparing everything and being the referee. And it's a lot of work, and you don't always have someone willing to take the role. So, as he actually founded Game Magazine, a board game magazine, so he was very much into board games. So, he started designing a board game which would actually be kind of a role-playing game, but without the need of a game master. So, basically, the game itself becomes the dungeon master. And that's how the original idea of Time Stories was born.
Time Stories has been extremely successful. I mean, it really is a great game. So you were part of the development team. You had a chance to test it and play lots of different versions until the actual game was published?
Yeah, it works that way a little bit. I mean, originally, when the game Time Stories was in prototype form, it was in a Swiss company named GameWorks. And GameWorks was handled by a guy named Sébastien Pochon. And Sébastien was having a lot of difficulties developing the game because it involved a lot of graphic materials and art and everything. So it's very costly to develop.
The game itself, you know, the artwork is beautiful, pieces, everything. It's beautifully designed.
Yeah, for sure. But it was tough for a small company to actually produce that. So it came up to us, said, okay, I'd like to do Time Stories, but I think it's too complicated for my company to do it alone. So we started working on that together. And Sébastien eventually worked with us inside the studio too. We became the designers of Time Stories. And during this time, we had a lot of tests going on, of course. Since the very beginning of Space Cowboys, we were working on Time Stories, and we still do. So it's a long-term process. And yeah, it was very fun because at the very beginning of the game, you didn't have a lot of visuals, actually. The game was mostly text-based, I will say. So for people who know the game, it was like playing with only the back of the cards. And well, after a few tests, adding a few scenes to actually interact with became a very, very important part of the game. And so now the game is a very interesting mix of visual scenes and detailed texts. So it's like a graphic novel that you're actually playing in and seeing the game evolved from the very beginnings of a text-based adventure book. Exciting, and it was quite fun, I must say.
There's a lot of world building. I'm going to geek out here for a sec and say that I studied physics. So whenever someone talks about time traveling and there's a mention of tachyons, the Tachyon Institute. And just to share something super geek with the audience, there's a slight misconception that nothing can go faster than the speed of light. And actually, what's interesting is if you do the math, it turns out that the speed of light is just a limit. It's a speed limit. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't have an object that's always going faster than the speed of light, but never slower. So in other words, not going under that speed limit. And that's actually what a tachyon is. Those are imaginary particles that supposedly go faster than the speed of light, always. So it was interesting. It was nice to see the usage of tachyons into that world. I mean, how much did people think about actual physics in terms of the world building?
I would say close to zero, actually. To be honest, you mentioned the Tachyons, and it's quite fun because this is on me, actually, because we had the idea of the name of the game, which was Time Stories, of course, but the first edition of the game, because we're now up to the second cycle, so it's Time Stories Revolution now, but the first version of the game was Time Stories. And just like it says on the cover of the book, you've got some little dots between the T, the I, the M, and the E, because it's an acronym, which means Tachyon Insertion in Major Events. I actually came up with this one, so I'm pretty proud of that. And we needed something which would give time as an acronym, obviously. And Tachyon came to mind immediately because, well, I'm a big fan of time travel and everything in science fiction. And, you know, they usually use tachyons at some point during the designing of a time traveling machine. I suggested it, and because nobody in the studio knew much more than me about physics, which is not a lot, by the way, they thought it was pretty a good acronym. And so they designed a full seal using it. You can see that in some of our websites and some communications we did. There is a complete badge or a kind of medal of honor where you see the complete acronym on it. And I think it actually describes very well what you do in the game. You actually insert yourself in another time period and you actually do stuff in it to try to keep the events as they should be and not the way paradoxes and temporal faults or troublemakers could actually divert the timeline. So I think it's a good name for the game because it actually describes what you do. And we still, of course, keep the basic idea of the game, which is time stories.
I had no idea that the T in Time Story stands for Tachyon. But yes, I did see in the game, as you mentioned, the seals were the full thing, but I hadn't made the connection, even though the dots were there. And yes, tachyons, as you say, they're often used in time travel because when you have something that goes faster than the speed of light, it often in physics will create some issues in terms of causality. And that's where supposedly you could have time travel where things could influence things before them. I'm curious, in terms of some great time traveling stories, I don't know if you heard of Wesley Chu's Time Salvager? Because that's a similar story where the agents go back in time and try and catch people who are manipulating time, but they also go sometimes and steal resources from different points in time in a way that doesn't affect history and bring them to the future.
I haven't read that, but the Time Stories, initially, it wasn't a game about time traveling. Emmanuel designed it as a real system to be used in different, you know, scenarios. So you would have a medieval scenario and you would have, I don't know, an ancient Greece scenario or a science fiction scenario. And so he designed actually a system, a kind of engine, again, to make it work using only cards and dice. So the way, basically, if you've played the game, you know what I'm talking about. So everything was here at the very beginning, but the theme was not here. It was console, still is in a way, but it was a console you bought and you got the system and then you put a deck of cards in it and played it and then you had a totally different world and everything. But during the very beginning of the process, when Sebastian and Manuel were working together without us, they thought that they needed something to tie everything up. And so they had the idea of the agency and the time traveling stuff. And then they needed some opponents. So they came up with the science and the Eloise. And that's about it. I mean, they didn't go much further than that. And they put that on paper. And when we started developing the game, because I'm such a big fan of science fiction and time traveling, I was, I guess, the only guy really interested in the studio about actual background history of the game, what was happening there. And so I went to Manuel and talked about this to him. And he was like, yeah, I understand you have so many questions and they're very interesting, but we don't need to answer them now to create the game. So we won't. Because this way we can keep all that in the background and then design things up the way we want them to be, the way we need them to be. Because what would be fun, of course, would be to have scenarios which would use these elements of background. So at the very beginning, nothing was much developed. And so it was during the conception of the subsequent scenarios that we actually created the whole background. So in a way, the background developed with the scenarios, not one before the other one. It was a process. It was an evolution. And in a way, the novel was a big part of that evolution too.
Time Stories was published this May by Angry Robot, and it's written by Christophe Lambert, who basically adapted the game into a science fiction novel. And there, obviously, you did have to kind of go into the world building. And was there some sort of like Bible that was put together in terms of, you know, what were the rules of the universe?
Yeah, definitely. We had started working on some kind of Bible because before the book was signed, we actually had a website going out named Time Chronicles, which actually unveiled a few details about the game by using a kind of debriefings. So basically, you finished up a scenario of Time Stories, and then you went on the internet, checked the website, and looked for the debriefing of your scenario, of the scenario you've just played. And it gave a lot of information about Eloise, science, and everything. And so by designing this website, the Time Chronicles, we had to ask a writer named Willy Dupont, who worked mostly for the website, and he designed a kind of backstory. And using his work and some of the works Manuel did on his own, we actually created some kind of Bible for the background of Time Stories. I would say it was much more into details and opponents and tying up the scenarios together than actually creating a background. We didn't ask ourselves exactly at that moment how the agency was funded and everything. The main point was to have background stuff tying the scenarios together, tying the story together. So we jumped it right into the middle and we didn't wonder or worry about what had happened before. And this ended with Christophe, actually, with the novel, because when Christophe was picked as the writer for the story by Bragelonne, the French publisher of the novel, I sent him a few boxes of the game so he could try. So he tried the first scenario and played a few more, and then read all the scenarios. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, okay, we need to meet, guys, because we really need to talk. Basically, if you want me to tell a story about Time Stories, or even, I don't know, maybe a mission for Time Stories, I really need more information that you give away in the scenarios. And we were like, okay, so let's meet. So we had a meeting at Bragelonne's and met with Christophe and some guys of a French publishing company. And we had a full afternoon of a kind of crazy meet pseudo-scientists trying to work out how time traveling works. And, well, we didn't find anything very useful, but we actually, together with Christophe, designed a kind of common Bible between the novel and the scenarios. And it was very, very important, both for the novel itself, but for the game too, because out of this meeting, we had so many new ideas, which actually led to the second cycle of the game. In a way, Time Stories Revolution, which is so the season 2 of Time Stories, uses a lot of the materials and the ideas we came up at this meeting. It was really important for us.
For those who aren't familiar with what a Bible looks like, I highly recommend checking out the Stranger Things Bibles. Basically, before the show was produced, the creators, they put together a really cool Bible that had visuals and backstories and lots of text. And that whole Bible was part of the pitch, basically, before they were able to get the green light to create Stranger Things. But the Bible itself already has images in there from 80s movies like E.T. and lots of other 80s movies. You're trying to create that world so people really know what they're using. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what that Bible looks like. It sounds like it's quite a lot of information.
Yeah, it's big. It's a big one. More importantly, I would say that the contents of the Bible were important because it actually forced us to set a few things in stone and to say that, okay, so from now on, we're sure that the science are this and the LOEs are that and the agency work like this. But what was very, very important for us is that Christophe made us ask some questions to ourselves and to answer them. And starting from that, we were like, basically, at the moment we started working on the novel with Christophe, Time Stories was still working very well, and it still is, by the way, but we had reached the seventh scenario of the first cycle, and we felt it was time to, you know, change the system a bit, because we felt it was a bit too complicated, and it worked very well, but it was mostly for gamers and experienced gamers and fans. And for a game to actually work so many years, you need to have some renewal of the audience. And so we needed to change the game a little bit to make it more non-gamer friendly and to make it less frightening in a way, because it's a very big game and we're announcing that it's like 5 hours to play a scenario and everything. So we wanted to make the game seem simpler.
Asylum, that's the first layer that you get with the voxel. It is a pretty challenging game to beat, especially there's a code that's quite difficult to break at the end. And if you don't break that code, you basically can't win the game.
Exactly. And the duration of the game is a monster, actually, because we're talking about 5-hour sessions. So we even put in the box a save system so that people could enter the game in the middle and then start over a few weeks later using the save system. But this works. It works for gamers. It works for fans, for veteran gamers, for role-playing gamers even. But for the bigger board game audience, it's a bit tough. It's a bit long. So we wanted to have something simpler and leaner. So we felt we needed to change the system. So Manuel was working on that. And then the novel happened. And Christoph asked us all these questions. And we had to answer them and create the Bible, a full, detailed Bible of what we wanted the game to be, actually, and what we wanted the game to become. And then Manuel had the idea to actually use the novel and the characters of the novel and a lot of things in the novel to actually make the transition between the first cycle of Time Stories and the second cycle. I can't spoil a lot because the main point of Time Stories is to discover stuff, so I won't spoil, but let's say that if you read the novel, you actually have a good idea of how the time agency works in the Time Stories first season, so you get a pretty good idea of how it works and what are the goals of the agency and everything. And you get to know a little bit of the enemies of the agency. And at the end of the novel, everything changes. And that's quite interesting because we use the novel as a way to go from one cycle to another and give the players a lot of information they wanted since the beginning about the Time Stories agency and stuff. And then basically everything changed. And though they have to play the second cycle to discover what's going to happen now to the agency they know and the character they discovered during the novel. So it was very useful and actually surprising because it wasn't planned at all to actually have the novel take so much place and importance in the overall development of the game.
You mentioned that the new cycle is more accessible. For listeners, they wanted to start playing Time Stories. Where should they start?
If you're a beginner in games and are interested in narrative games and want to live a story through a game, I think you should start with the scenarios from the new cycle of Time Stories, Time Stories Revolution. So the first one is out. It's Adult Project. It's a science fiction story, by the way. And you can play it straight away without knowing anything about Time Stories. The game is still not a very simple game. I mean, Splendor is easier if you're very new into gaming. But it's really not complex. I just have to delve a bit into the rules and work a little bit in that. But it used, I don't know, reading cards and reading books and everything. And maybe some game books, a lot of them like these. Or escape games, by the way. I think you will find some familiar grounds and it's not going to be that hard to play. If you're a player with a few games behind you and you're not afraid of a little bit more complex rules, you can start with a white box and Time Stories and Asylum, because despite the final riddle, which is a bit tough, the scenario itself is pretty fluid and you don't have many fights and uses of the system in a way. So you won't have to go deep into the rule sets and you won't probably have so many rules problem that you could have with complex games. So either the white box, if you're an average to experienced player, and if you're a complete newbie, go for Adult Project. Or you can also wait for Midsummer Night, our upcoming scenario, which has been delayed because of, you know, the virus and everything. So it's going to be released in September. And it's a weird scenario about, I can't spoil again, but it's mostly about a Shakespearean play. And it's totally weird. But the scenario itself is quite amazing because it's very simple. It's not very, you don't have a lot to learn and everything. So you can jump straight into the game itself, the scenario, the story itself. And it's very original. And I think it's a very good introduction to the Time Stories world.
Time Stories is cool because it's in essence a role-playing game and it's a cooperative game and it's ready to play right out of the box. No one has to be the dungeon master. In terms of role-playing, choosing your own adventure, there are a lot of different things that have been tested. I don't know if you've had a chance to see Black Mirror has an interactive choose your own adventure episode called Bandersnatch, which is also in that story. It's based on a Choose Your Own Adventure book. Have you had a chance to watch that?
Just a few minutes, because I wasn't really interested in the scenario itself. But the idea is very cool. And I've heard they're doing this again with a sitcom, actually, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And they will use the Bandersnatch system with this. So I think it's going to be pretty weird and interesting.
Now, when you're creating a movie or a show, that's a lot of video to record. There's a lot of effort, and some people don't always get to see all that footage, right? In time stories, at least, it feels like it's pretty efficient. You pretty much have to explore the entire world. You don't really miss out on things when you're playing time stories, or do you?
Actually, it's part of the system. In the first cycle, so the original time stories, we used a system of runs. So a run is a kind of singular adventure. So basically, you're entering a place and a time, and you're doing stuff. But ultimately, you'll probably lose, and you won't be able to fix the situation the agency has asked you to resolve, because the game is made that way. Don't worry about it. So basically,
I should just add that I lost the first
time. Yeah, but it's normal. I mean, it's part of the game. I will explain why, by the way, if you want. So basically, in time stories, you're supposed to lose twice or even three times before finding the golden path. The golden path is the ideal way to do the adventure. So basically, the first time you go in, you visit a lot of locations, you do a lot of stuff, you make a lot of mistakes, and basically you lose. But the second time, you avoid a lot of mistakes. And if you remember the movie, The Groundhog Day, which is quite fun, it's a bit like that. You know, in a way, you're trying to reach the perfect ending, and you have to figure it out, of course, because it's not always easy. And basically, that's a game. I mean, you go there once, twice, and then on the third time, everything becomes perfect. So yeah, you have to explore almost everything to be sure you're not missing anything. But as we developed the scenarios, we found it interesting to actually have players make choices, and they couldn't go back. And that was quite interesting, and we've thought it gave a new flavor to the game. You know, you had some moral choices to do, and on these choices, you couldn't go back. And as the game developed, we thought that for the second cycle, the new version of the game, Time Stories Revolution, we could get rid of the runs. And that's what we did, which actually shortened the overall duration of each scenario, which is a good thing, we think. And basically, you don't have to explore anything now, but you should go as far as you can. But due to this new structure, you won't have to actually visit every single card of the game. We basically don't want that. It can be frustrating for us, because it means that we are actually creating things that maybe some people won't see, and art some people won't look at. But we think it's very interesting, because in this way, and with the new cycle, when people talk about the adventures they've played, they haven't played exactly the same thing. Some players have seen a guy in a cave, for instance, and some others haven't, because they never went to the cave. This is very interesting, because they have the impression that the game is actually much deeper than when they played themselves, because they're like, okay, so there are a lot of things we haven't seen yet. So this is a new thing for us, because in the first cycle of Time Stories, you basically had to check everything out. And now it's different. Now the runs are gone, and you go there once, and you must succeed in one go. So basically, you will have to make choices, and you won't see everything. But that's fine for us.
It is amazing how much world building goes on. And it does feel a little bit like a shame when people don't get to see all of it. But I guess, yeah, that's part of the beauty, that they get to have free will and explore what they want to explore. Tell me, I mean, in terms of gameplay, so you yourself, I understand, are really into D&D, role-playing. Do you have any favorite games?
Oh, yeah. It's a complex question to answer, actually, for me, because there are so many games. As I told you before, I'm first and foremost a role-playing gamer. And of course, I work in a board game company, and I love board games, which is fortunate, of course, because I play a lot of them. I love developing games, actually, and being part of the process, because it's very exciting. Time stories were a bit of a golden goose or whatever, because for me, it had all of my main interests, a bit of role-playing, a bit of science fiction, a bit of time travel, a bit of board games and everything. So yeah, Time Stories is probably one of my favorite games. I play a lot of Blood Bowl, for instance, like if you want to name a two-player game when you basically beat up the opponent. It's quite fitting for the description. And it's one of my favorite games. And when I was younger, I played a lot of Magic the Gathering and also Diplomacy.
Diplomacy is an amazing game, I just want to say.
Yeah.
I used to play that when I was younger. Very competitive. Yeah. A lot of backstabbing. A lot.
Oh yeah, yeah. You think so? I was actually, I think, second in the French Championship in 1992, yeah. And I played the World Championship in 1993, I guess, in Birmingham, and we won the team event, so it was pretty cool. And yeah, I played a lot of diplomacy, and I love the game, even if I don't play it anymore because you can't find enough friends to play it. But playing it on the competitive level was actually great. I mean, it was really, really amazing, and yeah. Very time consuming.
Diplomacy is a bit like Risk, where you're trying to take over the world. It's framed within a World War I context. So it's really kind of like Russia, Turkey, and Europe. What's amazing about it is that there are no dice. So you're basically kind of moving your army, your pawns, but cutting deals with your neighbors on how to team up against people. Everybody has a chance to talk and negotiate, and then everybody writes down their moves at the same time, and then we reveal the moves together. So everybody moves at the same time, and then you see whether or not those people that you've made deals with have actually followed through on their word. And so it's pretty amazing to have a strategy game kind of like Risk, but without dice and truly based on diplomacy, right?
Yeah, it's a very psychological game. I mean, it's mostly about understanding what your opponents want and giving them what they want at the right moment and then taking it away. It can be cruel. And yeah, it was very important for me, this game, because I actually had to travel to play it because no internet at that time. So yeah, I went to a few countries and a few towns in France to play the game and met a lot of wonderful people. Yeah, it was very, very important for me. And if you ask me what game I want to play, I don't know, tonight, if I can choose from anything and any game, I will probably tell you a role-playing game, because that's it. And the fun part is that a lot of people in the industry and a lot of people who work with me, if you ask them the same question, you will have probably the same answer. I mean, role-playing game is a wonderful hobby, and I'm really happy with the way it's developing right in the US and the other countries, because it's becoming mainstream, and I think it's a very positive hobby. It promotes social skills and interaction, positive interactions, and respecting the other people at the table. And yeah, I think it's a wonderful hobby. And in a way, working on time stories for me was a great way to actually find a little bit of role-playing games in day-to-day job.
It's amazing that, you know, through Time Stories, you've actually also brought role-playing games to many more people. That itself is super cool, because not everyone knows the Dungeon Master.
When you talk to players of Time Stories after a while, after a few games, you get some very interesting reactions, quite similar to role-playing gamers, but some differences. And I can tell you that because when we started promoting the game, I mean, Time Stories, before it was out, actually went to a few conventions and festivals with my prototype in a pack. And we made sessions with players who, of course, have never played the game before. And during this time, I watched people play Time Stories like a lot. I think I've watched people play the beginning of Asylum like 50 times.
Wow.
Because basically we used the first scenario in the box, and I made them play like 15 time units of the game, which means roughly 1 hour or 1 hour and a half of gameplay, and then stopped it. And I was like, okay, game over. If you want to know what's next, you just need to buy the game. And at the beginning, it wasn't even released yet. So people were very, very frustrated that they actually proposed me money for letting them play through the whole scenario. That was very fun. But the thing is, I've watched them play a lot. And in a way, I'm mostly a game master when I play role-playing games. Not always, but like I would say 70% of the time. And the fun part is like I had less things to do, of course, than in a regular role-playing game. But just watching them go through the Asylum and making mistakes and having fun together, it was very reminiscent of what can happen at a role-playing, an actual role-playing table. So I wouldn't say that Time Story is a role-playing game, but it tickles the same parts of the brain. Interaction between players, communication, miscommunication sometimes, because you tend to forget to tell another player about something very important, and they realize that later, and they're like, okay, you could have told us about this. Oh, sorry, I forgot. And these kind of things you can have also in a role-playing, at a role-playing table. So it's not a role-playing game, but it draws on the same emotions and the same feelings. And that's why Time Story is so interesting.
You've sold me on Time Story. I love playing it. I look forward to playing the newer games. I think maybe for my wife, who's a less serious gamer, having these quicker games might be even better. I've also had a chance to play test some upcoming games that I know are going to be coming out next year, because when I was visiting the games convention in Cannes, I'm really looking forward to playing a lot more Space Cowboys games, and love what you do, and it sounds like you do as well, and we're both lucky to be able to be in such creative industries. Perhaps one day you and I can play a game of diplomacy. Obviously, we'll need more players.
Yeah, for sure. Just need to find victims. Oh, sorry, players.
That's right. It's kind of like, what is it in poker? They say, if you can't recognize who the sucker at the table is, that means it's you, right?
Yeah, it's like poker. A lot of things in common with poker, by the way, yeah, with diplomacy. Yeah,
absolutely. We'll wrap it up on that. And thank you again for this amazing conversation.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.